listening to a podcast from The National.
Tony Pulis's near two-year reign as West Brom manager came to an underwhelming end on Monday after a run of 2 wins in 12 games this season. A new job but same old results for David Moyes as the former Sunderland manager presided over a defeat on his debut as West Ham manager. His opposite number, Watford's Marco Silva, is a man very much in demand, with Everton bent on prizing the Portuguese to Goodison Park. Arsenal gave a reminder to the upstarts up the road in North London that they are still that part of the capital's dominant force, while Manchester City won again and Eden Hazard looked back to his mesmerising best for Chelsea. This is the Extra Time Podcast. I'm your host, John Turner. Joining me in the studio are Steve Luckings.
Hello, mate.
And John McCauley.
Hey, mate. How you doing?
All good, mate. All good. We'll also be joined on the phone today by Andy Mitten to discuss Paul Pogba's return to action for Manchester United. Gentlemen, let's start with David... Not David Moyes. We were going to start with David Moyes. And then just before we hit the record button, Tony Pulis got sacked.
Well, it was better than the last time we did this when we recorded an hour of Ronald Koeman not being sacked and then him getting sacked.
That's a very good point. Luckily, we caught that one. Yeah. Right, it was very much coming, wasn't it? I don't think... I mean, writing was on the wall after this week and even probably before this weekend. I mean, the result against Chelsea, it wasn't so much that a 4-0 defeat, but the manner of the defeat, the lack of organisation amongst the team. Of course, the fans have been very much kind of fed up with the Pulis way for quite some time. Give us your thoughts on all this, Steve.
Well, yeah, like you say, at the end, you could hear the chants of Pulis out ringing around the Hawthorns. It seemed very much a matter of when and not if. It seems weird, doesn't it, that... I think you can trace this back to last season when, you know, they were safe with, what, 7-8 games to go? You know, took their foot off the pedal, had their flip-flops on and down the beach, and they've never recovered from it. They've never recovered that kind of run of form. But I think the most worrying thing for West Brom has been, you know, two distinguishing features of a Tony Pulis team, a team that plays with heart and very good defensive organisation. And the last one in particular deserted them horribly in the Chelsea game. The Marcus Alonso goal was absolutely shambolic. The way he just stole in at the back post, a very simple volley in. You know, that is not a Tony Pulis trademark defensive team. So that suggests to me that maybe the players had stopped playing for him. And it's been very evidenced by the results. I mean, like you say, what is it? 1 win since March, is mm-hmm. it? It's not been good enough, and it was only going to end in one way, and that's with Tony Pulis losing his job.
I mean, the stats are pretty damning, aren't they, John? I think you've got a few of them there, haven't you?
I do indeed. So you've got, I don't know if it was, this makes for a pretty poor reading. There's been 12 games this season, and that he's won 2.
And they were the first 2 games of the season, weren't they?
Yeah.
So a great start to the campaign.
Yeah, but the win percentage from going from 100% is now at 16.7.
Right.
But I think Pulis came in on Friday, would it have been, for his press conference, and he was armed to the teeth with all his stats, basically promoting what he had done, saying that he had made them a mid-table Premier League team, he'd brought stability to the club, they were the best Midlands club, which I don't know if that's quite the claim to fame it used to be.
Didn't Leicester win a Premier League title?
Exactly, so you just could tell, well, the writing's been on the wall, John, as you said, for a long time, but you could tell if a manager's doing that, I think that the cracks have already appeared and they're starting to go through the club. And he was really just a victim, maybe of his own football philosophy, that he's the guy that you got to come in and he would get your results. It didn't matter how he got them. It was functional football. It wasn't pretty, but he was almost a guarantee to get you those results and get you to stay on the table. The famous stat or whatever that he always trawled out was that he'd never been relegated as a manager or a player. But they're, 1 point above the relegation zone at the minute. They don't look as if they were getting any better under him. So it looked as if, as unfortunate as it is, that kind of time was up for him at West Brom.
But I mean, you look through that, don't you? West Brom have never been big goal scorers. I mean, I don't know what Salomon Rondon's goal scoring record is, but it's certainly not impressive. And Jay Rodriguez, again, he's a good player, but, you know, doesn't scream from the rooftops goals galore, does he? And so when you're not a team that are in rude health in terms of goals. You've got to keep them out, and that's not what they were doing. And, yeah, it's largely with the same team that he's always had there. You know, proven performers like, you know, Brunt and McCauley and Dawson. He brought in Hegazi, didn't he? The Egyptian lad who seemed like the atypical Tony Pulis defender, you know, big, brutal and ugly. But they've not been shipping them out. You know, the midfield is very samey, you know, other than Krychowiak to add a quality passing game. You know, there's no real players in there who grab games by the scruff of the neck and drive a team forward. And you know, it's obviously a shame for him. Yeah, he's, like you said, he's one of these managers that are almost worth their weight in gold, you know. When relegation from the Premier League almost threatens your club's survival, then managers like him are worth that. But it's not been happening for him. He may have lost the dressing room. It certainly looked like that in the capitulation against Chelsea. And Chelsea were fantastic in that game as well. Eden Hazard looks back, as you said in the intro, to his mesmerising best. But yeah, this was only going to go one way, and it wasn't going to be a reversal of fortunes for West Brom.
What do you think next for Tony Pulis? And do you think there'll be an SOS out for him in a few months and try and save another team from relegation? What do you see?
BN Sports. I would imagine that's usually...
Weekend on the golf course. Yeah.
Where he would take off to. It's a difficult one because I know everyone said it as well with the likes of Palace looking for a new manager. To know who do you get to get you out of this position, it would be Tony Pulis would be the guy that you would look for. So I don't know if there's anyone else around at this point in time that would need him. I certainly don't think Everton are going to go anywhere near him. So maybe he just bides his time and maybe sees if anything comes. I don't think he'd be in any rush to get back into football straight away.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I don't think football clubs would see him as anything other than damaged goods at the moment. I don't think you should dismiss what he has achieved at the clubs that you've mentioned. But yeah, certainly it would be good for Pulis to be away for the game and then, like you say, in January coming and firefight a team that's struggling.
So who next for West Brom then? I mean, the news broke so quickly before we came into the studio. No names have actually been linked yet. So we've been linking a few ourselves, haven't we?
There we go. We can start the trend.
That's it. Yeah.
Well, I think, I mean, you come up with this one, so I'll credit you with this. But yeah, Michael O'Neill, I think the Northern Ireland manager, is a great shout, really, really good shout. Clearly a man in demand as well. I know he's been heavily linked with the Scotland job. Sam Allardyce as well, another very much in the Pulis mode of you know, a guy who comes in and, you know, gets a team defensively well organised and makes them hard to beat before they, you know, stops them losing games rather than going all out for winning games. So I think they'll be top of the list.
It's a really difficult one because they need someone in there that's going to change around their fortunes and get them up the table as quickly as possible, because it's very, very compact and condensed down there. And you wonder if you were to go with a Michael O'Neill who doesn't have the experience in the Premier League, doesn't have any experience in club football recently, it's something of a gamble to go for somebody like that. So do you try and coax a Sam Allardyce into taking that job if he'd be interested in it? I'm trying to think, are there any other managers around there that of that mould that would fit into that? But it's a very difficult one because first and foremost they need someone who's going to come in and really give the whole place a lift, and the next few fixtures would be very, very important for them.
Maybe Craig Shakespeare, man looking for a job. Or
normally, when we come in here and discuss managers' vacancies, you normally champion Carlo Ancelotti, Steve. Not this time, mate.
I suspect he may keep his powder dry up this one.
I was just looking, just interestingly, there. Their next four games, they've got Spurs at the weekend away, but then they play Palace, Newcastle, Palace, and Swansea. So they're three key matches before they then face Liverpool and Manchester United.
Yeah, so they're games they've got to target for, you know, at least maximum points in two of them games, you would think.
Mm-hmm.
So from a manager that's just been sacked to one that's newly appointed, David Moyes at West Ham, was it his 500th game in charge?
It was.
Yeah?
It
didn't go that well, did it? Did you?
No, not a happy milestone for him, admittedly.
As you said, he's obviously aware of the task at hand now. How do you see this one going? I mean, I spoke to Graham last week, and he was kind of in defence of Moyes a little bit, thinking that his kind of reputation has taken a bit of a battering because of, I mean, someone was going to take Sunderland down eventually, and he was given a big job at United. But I mean, he's as you said, he's got a big task on his hands, hasn't he?
Yeah, massively. And you know, I think the fact that the board only gave him a 6-month contract speaks, you know, it's a pretty loaded contract, really, that there's not that much faith in him. And but, you know, I do look at the West Ham squad and think it's maybe a false position. I think they've got enough quality to certainly move up the table. But, yeah, you know, Watford were great in that game. Aurelio Gomez pulled off some blinding saves, none better than the double save against Marco Arnautovic. But again, the goals that Watford scored, you know, they were very simple goals. You know, what I mean is, like, Watford didn't really have to churn through the gears to get that result. And again, you know, a team like West Ham should be looking at a team like Watford and thinking, right, we should, even if it's away from home, we should be going there and at least coming away with a point. But they were never in that game. I don't think they were ever going to come away with anything other than a defeat from the opening 5-10 minutes. And Moyes was pretty scathing about his so-called big-name players with big-name reputations. Mark Noble afterwards made some very backhanded comments about, you know, players sticking together and not whispering behind each other's backs. So you add them all up and you take them together, and maybe the job is a lot bigger than we are Moyes anticipated.
I think as well that it will only get bigger if you look at their fixtures again, because you thought Watford...
And you're the only one with a laptop who can see it. We don't have that.
Giving away the secrets. They've got Leicester and Everton in the next two games. You would have grouped Watford in that with three games that they would be looking to get points from anyway. And then they've got Manchester United, Liverpool, Chelsea and Arsenal in four of their next five games. So you could be looking at that by the time they play Stoke on December 16, before you get into an incredibly busy time over Christmas. They could be in even more trouble than they actually are. And Moyes, I thought at the weekend he needed to get something from that because of what's coming up and because of his reputation as it has been for the past couple of clubs that he's been at, that he really needed to start off with on a positive note. And as you said, Steve, to give away kind of a defeat to an admittedly good Watford side, and they have been good this season. It's been one of the refreshing stories in the league, but they didn't need to be as good.
It was a good time to play them. Watford were on the run of three straight defeats. Mm-hmm. You know, that should have been a game that they targeted to cause an upset, and they didn't. Yeah, and Moyes is right. You know, someone like Arnautovic, who you know, is a good player, is a Premier League performer, but again, he's not done anything. I saw one stat that he made 44 sprints last night. Well, I can count two of them, and both of them ended up in Gomez saving the ball. But yeah, he's got a real task on his hands. Like I say, I think if you go through that squad, particularly at the top of the field in Andy Carroll and Javier Hernandez, they and Mikel Antonio is obviously a big miss. You know, I think he definitely gets the team up the pitch with his drive and his energy and his eye for goal, obviously. And Lanzini, great quality on the ball. So I think between them, there's enough there that will steer West Ham clear. But yeah, as Colt said, like he's probably wishing January upon him tomorrow, isn't he? He's probably thinking, right, let me get in some players. Let's just hope he doesn't do what he did at Sunderland and sign a load of ex-Everton and Manchester United players. But yeah, you would think realistically they have to get there in touching distance of teams around them.
Mm-hmm. Next two matches are huge, basically. Next two league
matches. He has to say positive, though, doesn't he? I mean, he can't start being all defeatist like he did as soon as he turned up at Sunderland. He has to at least maintain a facade of positivity because as you said, this isn't a bad West Ham side. They've got enough about them to stay up, but they're not kind of, there isn't enough quality for them to kind of blag their way to safety. They could quite easily stay kind of down there. Do you know what I mean? If they're not careful.
They've been too good to go down before. Yeah. You know, you look at the teams that they had in the past, with the likes of Joe Cole and wasn't it Defoe and, yeah. and was Michael Carrick, in the team at the time. So, you know, this league, we've said it before, that once you get outside that top six, there isn't really much to separate all the teams below that. And when you look at the fixture list coming up, you just think that they could find themselves playing serious catch-up. As I said, going into a really, really busy time at Christmas whenever, you know, the spirits will be pretty low by that stage, you would imagine.
It's interesting what you said about, you know, keeping spirits uplifted, because the West Ham fans have not been, you know, falling over themselves in support of Moyes' appointment. So, yeah, he's got to keep them on side. But, you know, it's impossible to keep fans on side and upbeat when the teams are putting in such poor performances.
His opposite number on Sunday, Marco Silva, the Watford manager. There's plenty of speculation surrounding him. Of course, Everton had an approach for him turned down. He was quite non-committal in his post-match comments, just saying that I'll be at training on Monday. But he didn't really say what he was going to be doing on Tuesday, Wednesday or Thursday, did he? Which is...
And who's training?
Yeah, that's true, yeah. I'll be at a training session on Monday. How do you see this one going? Of course, Watford are going to want to keep hold of him. Everton clearly want him. He's not really giving anything away. How do you see this one ending?
Well, it's me and you have spoken about this in the past, haven't we? That it's Watford's kind of short-termism is really what separates them from pretty much every Premier League club going. You know, they kind of sign player. I'd be amazed if any player or any official there is on a more than a two-year contract. They kind of have that short-term goal that we'll get these managers in. If they do great for us, they'll probably move on. Yeah, we'll act as a stepping stone, but there'll be a compensation package in it for us. Same with players. You know, we'll take a punt. Or, you know, their scouting network is you know, really come to the fore over the summer with Richarlison especially. But they, you know, they think, okay, well, again, we'll sign these players. We'll maybe sell them at a profit. You know, it's to be admired, I think. And they obviously probably didn't envisage that after 13 games someone would be, you know, making overtures towards their manager. But it only speaks of the great job that Marco Silva has done there in such a short space of time. The football he's got Watford playing, you know, his reputation, it's amazing, isn't it? He was relegated last season, but he came out with his reputation enhanced even from that position. So my gut feeling is that he probably will go to Everton. You know, I think it's they've offered two financial compensation packages so far. And, you know, like if a player is worth 15, 20 million pounds, then what price your manager? You know, Everton will probably come back and they'll probably get their man. And, Watford owners will probably be happy with that package. Sad that they've lost a manager. But then probably go give Tony Pulis a job.
Do you think Marco Silva could start developing a reputation, though, of jumping ship? I mean, okay, fair enough. His Hull City contract was short anyway. It was just an attempt to save relegation. But what happens after 15, 20 games? He does well at Everton and then AC Milan come calling or something like that. You can't keep jumping clubs.
You go
clubs.
To AC Milan.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
And then 15, maybe not at the moment.
Yeah. But you can't keep jumping clubs. You've got to... I mean, I don't know. How would... Do you not think he really cares about that? I mean, is Everton just too big a bigger job to...
I think he's destined, and I know it's maybe a bit disrespectful to Watford, but I think he is destined to get a job of a club at a higher level or with greater aspirations. And Everton have, obviously, they've been bankrolled in the summer. It hasn't really worked out for them, mind you, but there's money there and there's a willingness to invest there and to make them someone who can challenge for that top six that I was talking about. So I think it would be a very attractive package for him, not just financially. I think that's something that he would feel that he would need to do. I wouldn't be too sure if he'll do it maybe now. But, you know, I don't think he'd be short of offers, let's say, whenever it comes to the summer with other clubs. Once Everton, obviously, they'll have somebody in place at that stage.
Yeah,
so,
will he have higher aspirations than Everton?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I think. And I think that if his reputation develops the way it has done and at the rate it has done, especially this season, he would be looking at someone, you know, of a higher standard than Everton. So I think Watford might be able to hang fire until the end of the season and then assess it and see what happens then.
It could end up going to Chelsea. If Antonio Conte gets moved on and then if Watford continue their season, like, that might be an opening.
Yeah.
You end up jumping ship to Everton now. I can't see what the great leap would be from Watford to Everton right now.
No, definitely.
Marco Silva.
I couldn't agree more. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, in terms of the outlay that Everton made and the outlay that Watford had, obviously there's a massive disparity, but the signings that Silva made are performing much better. I mean, Richarlison is, again, he's the same kettle of fish, I guess. You know, he's not going to stay at Watford long term. He's burnishing his reputation with some really impressive performances. You know, there'll probably be vultures sniffing around him in January, but he would do well to stay at Watford, especially till the summer. And then, like you say, bigger clubs will come in. So, yeah, Chelsea's not a terrible shout.
Would you stay if you're Marco Silva then?
Yeah, I would. Yeah. I've, you know, Everton fans will pelt me with eggs for this, but I don't. Everton are not good enough to win anything and not bad enough to go down. They're just a go-nowhere club, as far as I can tell.
Let's go back to the start of the weekend, chaps, and let's discuss the North London derby. Let's get this one out of the way quickly so it's not too painful for you. Heading into the weekend, as it has been for North London derbies over the last couple of seasons, everyone kind of writes off Arsenal and expects a walk in the park for Tottenham. Everyone does their combined 11s and it's 10 Tottenham players and Alexis Sanchez. but the actual result and performance, there was only one King of North London on Saturday afternoon.
Absolutely. Arsenal thoroughly, thoroughly deserved that win. They were sharper, they were more creative, they had more bite in the tackle. Massively fortunate with the first goal. I mean, it was never a foul. Sanchez on Sanchez, and there was massive, massive suspicion of offside for Mustafi. But that should not detract from the fact that Arsenal were better in every single department and were thoroughly worthy winners.
It's unfortunately for Tottenham fans, it's another example of them not really stepping up whenever the pressure's on. I would say, and I know that they did that against Real Madrid, certainly, and they played brilliantly against Liverpool last month, but I just felt that the two big matches this season in the league for them were going away to United, when United weren't at their best either, and you thought that maybe Spurs could give them a game. Spurs were in good form, and admittedly they were missing Harry Kane, who was in great form himself. And then the Arsenal match, where you thought this is a real chance for Spurs to really lay down a marker and show that the balance of power has shifted. And they didn't do it. And whether or not, you know, they did, okay, there were a couple of decisions that went against them. Kane and Ali are certainly not fit. I don't think Kane's been fully fit since the Liverpool match when he went off with a hamstring.
Was really surprised that he left it so late to bring Son on. Son should have been on at half time, I felt. Mm-hmm.
Well, and playing, you know, I think I've said before, Sissoko is not the sort of player that you want to be going into.
He looks great until he has to do something with the football, isn't he?
But he's not someone you want to go into a match of, you know, real high stakes with. But for Arsenal, a fantastic result for them. But then it begs the question, you know, Arsenal have to go and back this up next week. Who do they play at the weekend? The guy with the laptop looking
at exactly.
Burnley, I think it is. You know, they've got to go and back this up because, excuse me, they've been rightly criticised and the balance of power did seem to be shifting. And yes, they've stood up against their main rivals and got a really, really good win and a really good 3 points that moves them close to Spurs. I think they're only a point behind them. And it keeps them in touch with everybody above them apart from Manchester City. So that's excellent. And Ozil was rightly praised for his contribution. Well, but I was just going to say, but again, you know, that's one match. That's a match that you shouldn't be just getting up for one match and motivated for one game of a season and then drifting back into what he's been doing and being pretty lackadaisical in the last few weeks.
Well, that's, I was going to say, you mentioned Mesut Ozil there. It was the performance of their three sort of marquee players that I'm sure have Arsenal fans buzzing the most, and this is what they've been really looking for all season. All three of them contributed to both goals. As you said, they've just got to kick on now and really try and Wenger and the team really got to start developing something around those three.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because for most of the big games this season, Wenger has dropped Lacazette for the real big matches, and you know he decided to play with all three of them, and it massively paid off. And like you said, you know, Arsenal fans in the summer when they made this superstar signing, that's what they envisaged. Their three best players, their three best attacking players, you know, causing havoc, in the big games, and they did. You know, Lacazette was superb, I thought. You know, Sanchez as well. I think that was his first goal at the Emirates in 6 months. You know, and again, also as well, got a standing ovation when he came off. But yeah, as you rightly say, that's one game I can remember now in at least 12 months, maybe even longer. So yeah, as long as they back it up and they go to the Europa League on Thursday, don't they? They're mm-hmm. away to Köln. Spurs, you know, they're away to Dortmund in the Champions League. Yeah, it is, that game has come around very quickly for them to try and get this out of the system. You know, Champions League has been where they've undoubtedly performed the best this season. So if they can go to Dortmund, maybe get a point, last game in the Champions League group stage at home to Apoel, Spurs will be going through to the knockout stages. So that has got to be the next target for Pochettino and his men, because like you say, no one's going to catch Manchester City now. You know, it is, you know, second place is the only prize up on offer, and progress in the Champions League.
Well, Dortmund have been on wretched form anyway, so yeah. Tottenham will fancy their chances when they face them.
But it would be very Spursy to play so badly against Arsenal and then go to Dortmund and wipe the floor with them, but we shall see.
That result leaves Tottenham 3 points behind second place Manchester United, who beat Newcastle in Saturday's late kickoff. Steve spoke to Andy Mitten on the phone earlier to get his thoughts on the game.
And joining us on the line now is our European football correspondent, Andy Mitten. He is in London. Andy, how are you, my friend?
I'm fine, thank you. Nice to join you.
Jolly good, jolly good. It's lovely to have you. Now, Andy, you were at Old Trafford on Saturday for Manchester United's win over Newcastle United. Very impressive they were. It was obviously an emotional return for Zlatan Ibrahimovic following a lengthy layoff and re-signing for the club over the summer. But I think more importantly, perhaps, is in the long term at least, was the return to action of Paul Pogba. Now, he really did make the difference, didn't he? I thought the chip ball for Anthony Martial's equaliser was absolutely exquisite. The kind of inviting ball that all strikers want to go and attack.
Yeah, Pogba was excellent. It was great to have him back. He made a huge difference. Manchester United have missed him while he's been out injured for 12 matches. Results have dipped. The goals have dried up. And I think in the dressing room, Pogba's such an important figure. The younger players really look up to him. The older players acknowledge that he's the best player at the club. Jose Mourinho said after the game on Saturday that, you know, we missed him. And there are certain players who can affect matches like he can. And he's a world-class footballer. This was always going to be a big season for him. Because last season when he joined, he had the pressure of the fee. He'd not done a pre-season. And he had a good season last year. But he didn't really stand out in some of the biggest games like you might expect the most expensive player in the world to do. And so he came back on Saturday. He made an assist, as you quite rightly described. It was beautiful. And before doing that, he beat a man. I always remember Roy Keane saying to me, beating a man in football is the hardest thing to do. Pogba has got that in him. He went past Hayden. He dummied him before putting the cross in. And then he got a goal himself in front of the Stretford end, after Marcus Rashford had quite selflessly headed the ball into his path. And that goal also involved Romelu Lukaku, Juan Mata. So not only is Pogba back, he's helping the team get a good... the confidence, you could see it lift on Saturday. You could see that all four goals came from four different players. There's so many different players involved in Manchester United's attacking play. I should also credit Newcastle United and their fans. Their fans were fantastic. I didn't agree with all of the songs, but they were still fantastic. They were the better team for the first 20 minutes.
Yeah, they were well worth their lead, weren't they?
They were worth the lead. It could have been two. And I watched Newcastle at Burnley two or three weeks ago. I think I did the match report for the paper. It was a really poor game of football. Newcastle came for the draw. They got beat 1-0 by Burnley because everybody gets beaten 1-0 by Burnley, especially at Turf Moor. But at Old Trafford, they were fantastic. And there's not been enough great Manchester United games in recent years. So even this season when Manchester United were putting four past Everton and Crystal Palace and West Ham, it was like you're watching a machine. You know, it was good and every fan would walk away from the ground, or at least the home fans, happy with the result. But on Saturday, it felt like a bit of a humdinger. Newcastle United, they came, they attacked. Manchester United went through the gears. They were ahead by half-time. They were a far better team in the second half. And it was needed. It really was needed because the mood has dipped since that draw at Anfield in October. United have lost two games since then at Huddersfield, at Chelsea. Jose Mourinho has not always looked a picture of contentment. But to bring Pogba back and all the smiles that he brings and the quality that he brings, and he's just the best player. You know, Ander Herrera came in and he's just not as good as Paul Pogba. And that showed. It showed in results. It showed in performances. And Ander's a good player and he's a great lad. But Pogba is the man and he showed it. And I think what he's now got to do is come up with that type of performance against one of the top teams, because Manchester United really struggle against the top teams.
Okay, Andy, United are in Champions League action this week, away to Basel. Now, given their healthy points cushion at the top of Group A, and with a difficult game against Brighton in the Premier League on Saturday, what sort of team do you see Jose Mourinho putting out?
I think he'll put a strong team out against Basel. He wants to qualify as group leaders, and because United have won the four games so far, that looks very probable that it's going to happen. But it will put it beyond doubt this week, because the final game against CSKA Moscow is a few days before the Manchester derby. If Manchester United are through as group winners, then that will allow them to experiment and rest some key players for the Moscow game at the start of December. Manchester United have got, I worked out, I think, 14 games between now and the end of 2017. That's 6 weeks. They've only played 7 matches in the previous 6 weeks. So to get a bonus game, if you like, by going through will be a big help to Mourinho. So I think he'll put a strong team. Manchester United, I've not got a good record in Basel. I can remember being there in December 2011, I think, when Basel knocked United out of the competition. And they're a good team. Swiss football is not ranked alongside Spanish or French football. Basel have been Champions League mainstays. And I think Mourinho put a strong team out. And then Brighton are doing very well. But Brighton at Old Trafford, Brighton who don't really have an obvious striker at Old Trafford. There'll be no excuses if Manchester United don't win that either. I think the tougher games coming up are Arsenal away and Manchester City at home. That's a huge match.
Definitely. Okay, now Andy, you're about to embark on something of a journalistic odyssey over the next few weeks, which obviously kick-started on Saturday with a game at Old Trafford. Now, tell us where this epic journey is going to take you, what teams you're going to see, the fans you're going to speak to. Just give us a little bit of an insight into the life of a sports journalist.
Well, there's a lot of travel, and I find that I'm always juggling my work with my family. I've got 2 young daughters, and I work hard to support my family. And I like to interview people face-to-face. I think you get better interviews when you do that. I think in football, if you can go out and meet people. And in the last few days, and I've been writing about my diary, and we'll be publishing it in the National, and I'll be putting it out online. Yesterday, I just bumped into Tom Cleverley's dad, and I had a cup of tea with Tom, Tom's father.
And so you were at Watford West Ham on Tom. Sunday, yeah?
I was at Watford West Ham Sunday, and the day before I was at Manchester United, Newcastle United, and in the morning at the reserve derby for United and City. I'm now in London. I'm going to go to Brighton against Stoke tonight. Tomorrow, I'm going to catch a train through France, Belgium, and into Germany to watch Dortmund against Tottenham. On Wednesday, I'm going to go right down the Rhine to watch Basel against Manchester United. Thursday, back up the Rhine, Köln against Arsenal. Friday, West Ham against Leicester. Saturday, Manchester United against Brighton. And then I've got a few days when I go back to Spain, and then I'm off to South America. And I'll be writing a load of games in Brazil and Argentina. Gremio might become champions of South America while I'm there. I'll be interviewing people. I do enjoy it. I like to travel. I think I'm very fortunate to travel and watch football. And I just think that if you're going to be a journalist like I am, it's good to have good connections and to meet people, to speak to people. And you just find out what's happening, which helps you. It informs you when you're doing your work. And just bumping into Tom's dad yesterday, I know exactly what everyone's thinking at Watford now, and I'll probably get an interview with Tom for the National ahead of their game against Manchester United next week. And I think November's not a bad month to travel in Europe. It's not as warm as it is in Abu Dhabi, but the airports tend to be quieter. Although this time I'm doing it by train, it's a much more pleasant way of travelling. I speak to fans. I immerse myself in their culture. I plan on standing the huge terrace at Dortmund, and that helps me to do my job.
Excellent. Well, Andy, we definitely look forward to the diary entries and the match reports. Thanks very much for joining us, mate. Enjoy tonight's game.
Another player who's been equally instrumental to his own team's fortunes this weekend and for the rest of this season so far, Mohamed Salah, the Egyptian forward at Liverpool. He's had a pretty good few weeks, hasn't he, with Egypt and, of course, now with Liverpool. Their victory over Southampton sees them kind of recovering a bit of form after their stutter, and of course a lot of that's been down to Salah, and he's got himself a nice little record as well, hasn't he?
He has. 14 goals in all competitions, but that was his ninth goal in his first 12 league games to see him overtake Robbie Fowler. I do seem to remember one of us in the studio saying that he needed to improve his finishing a few weeks ago, but I forget who that was.
That was Kev.
It was Kev, yeah. Can't keep his mouth shut, can he? But yeah, no, he was absolutely superb in the win over Southampton. I thought the first goal, the first finish, curling outside of the left foot, curling with his left foot, was just absolutely superb. But, you know, he's one of those players that every team needs. He's got that ability to get in behind defences and to finish off chances. He stretches games, he stretches defence. He's, you know, I love left-footed players anyway, and cutting in from the right-hand side, he's just been lethal this season.
Good finisher, isn't he, McCauley? Yeah.
When he wants to be. To be saying that, he's got, 14 goals, and I think he's got 4 assists in 18 matches this season, I think, if that's right. But he could have scored a fair few more.
You can't win with him, can you?
Can you imagine when he's a dad and his kid gets 98 on a test, where was the other 2%?
It's laziness, that's what that is. He's been fantastic, and he's so important to the way Klopp wants Liverpool to play, and he just gives opposition players or defenders something, and managers actually, something extra to worry about, because you've got Sadio Mane on the other side from him, who's His return to the fitness and form has been really timely as well. And if you've got him on the left and Salah on the right and Firmino up front, you've really got Coutinho there as well. You've got a front four that's really, really going to hurt players. And it's great to see Salah has managed to kind of come to the Premier League and show that his time at Chelsea wasn't reflective of how good a player he was. And he reinvented himself, or he certainly got back into the sort of form that everyone thought that he should be showing at Roma. And he's been fantastic for Liverpool. And they just look like, the problems at the back are well documented, but they look like a team at the moment especially that will always get themselves on the score sheet. And that's a great knack to have whenever you're going into any of the big games, especially this season.
But it's been a great response, hasn't it, since the 4-1 defeat to Spurs at the end of October. You know, it's 3 Premier League games, 3 wins, 10 goals scored. Obviously going great guns in the Champions League. They're up against Sevilla this week. Just a single point separating those two at the top of Group E. So, I guess, do you think he's going to prioritise that game? I mean, he's got to, hasn't he? He's got to send out a strong team. I think, you know, as we've said, Liverpool are bunched in that kind of group with Arsenal and Burnley. Unbelievable. is it 22 points, 23 points? But yeah, there's no room for him to prioritise, is it? He's got to go strongest teams in every competition he goes for.
You would think so. And, you know, as I said, Liverpool's attacking prowess is that frightening that I think that they can go into any game and think that they can get a result. So I would imagine that they could go to Sevilla and I think Liverpool are very, very impressive whenever they've got their front four firing. And I don't think Klopp would have... I don't think he would have one eye on the weekend, let's just say, because they need to get that win against Sevilla, get progression sorted, and then look forward to a really busy time over Christmas before you get back into European football.
What utter nonsense that there was like pressure on him a few weeks ago, wasn't there? Yeah. Isn't it just ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a very fickle business, isn't it? Yeah, it is ridiculous, but it's the nature of the beast, isn't it?
A team that are certainly flying, Manchester City. It's over, isn't it?
I like the way that we've just put them at the back of the show, yeah, just because they dominate every other show we do.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, we just spent most of the show talking about all these teams in good form and recovering from blips, and City are just a juggernaut. I mean, it's a good 2-0 win at Leicester. I mean, what else is there to say? They're just so good, aren't they?
This is it. So they've got the talent, they've got the quality, but they've also got fortune and luck on their side, because Kompany really should have been sent off. Jamie Vardy, you know, whether John Stones is coming around on the recovery, he denied him a clear goal-scoring opportunity. So Kompany stays on the pitch. And even for De Bruyne's goal, you know, Leicester are putting the City goal under pressure, hit the post, then 15 seconds later, they're a goal down. So, you know, we all know where City's deficiencies lay. It's at the heart of the defence. But the way they suffocate you of the ball and just strangle you, it's impossible to really test it for 90 minutes. So, yeah, I don't know. We ask the question every week, how do you stop them? I think unless lightning strikes the pitch and they're all on it, you don't.
You look at, was it last season at Leicester, they had that horrendous result and that really showed that Guardiola was struggling at the time, and there couldn't be any bigger contrast now that as Steve said, they just don't give the other team a chance really to impose themselves at all and to get into the game, especially once they've got a goal. And then I think Guardiola's made a point this season of one goal's not going to be enough, two goals isn't going to be enough. He needs to be racking up almost cricket scores every match that they're playing. And they were tested to a certain extent the first 15 minutes or so against Leicester, and then they just did what they've been doing for most of the season, where they just click into gear and they don't look as if they can be stopped. And I was thinking about it, I think the football they're playing at the moment, or the football they've been playing since the start of the season, you'd be hard pushed to see who's rivaled that in the Premier League in the last 5, 6, 7 years probably.
Yeah, totally. And when you think that, you know, Bernardo Silva, we've only seen flashes of him so far, I think he's going to become more and more important as the season goes on. Fabian Delph, who is a Premier League standard midfielder, and now Guardiola's turned him into a world-class left-back. And Aguero started on the bench, didn't he? Or has been starting on the bench. So you think at some time he's going to become the front-line forward again, and there's always going to be goals there. Yeah, just why did the other teams even bother, really?
You can hear people trying to cling on to reasons why they might start to falter, and the only one people can think of is, maybe they get complacent. But like Pep Guardiola is a famous perfectionist, and he's an intense individual. He's just not going to let that happen, is he?
No.
When they're all so obviously focused on the same goal of, you know, of world domination almost. You just can't see how this can, you know, the wheels can even start to come off at any point.
Yeah, and also they're going great guns in the Champions League. I really think they could. They've got the squad to win it this season. I think, you know, PSG are obviously going to be in there, Barcelona, but I really think City could have a real good shot at it this season.
I was just thinking, actually, that before you mentioned PSG, that would be quite a tasty final, that, I think, for something a little bit different. Two clubs with huge financial backing and playing some of the best football that we're seeing this season in Europe. It would be a pretty tasty final, that, I'd say.
Yeah.
It's amazing to think, though, that English clubs were falling so far behind the likes of Bayern Munich, Barcelona, Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid, and now it looks like you see the kind of the landscape now. Bayern are far from kind of as dominant as they have been in the past. That a PSG Man City final almost looks like the kind of not likely outcome. So many things can happen, but it's far from far-fetched, isn't it?
You know, yeah,
it's
no, totally.
Certainly a
and
strong
I think it's one, as Colt says, you'd like to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It would be nice to see someone other than one of the established names contest the final. And yeah, they're well-equipped, they're well-armed, you know, financial backing, as we saw over the summer. The pair of them teams have got serious designs on winning that trophy.
Yeah, I think a lot of people say that, you know, it's just because of the money that that's been pumped into the Premier League, especially this summer, that's why the clubs are starting to do well in the Champions League again. But you've got to look, the clubs in the Champions League, the English representatives in the Champions League have got some of the best managers in the world. So they don't just have the best players, but they've got real tacticians and you would say the elite level managers there. So it's no surprise that they're doing so well.
Right, fellas, that's all we've got time for this week. Thanks very much for stopping by.
Thanks, mate.
Thank you.